You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, this is Shovik and welcome to the Mint TechCetera podcast. I cover technology for Mint, where we try to make boring tech sound cool for you and hope that we don't end up making cool tech sound boring. Tune in as we decode the latest from the world of technology in India and around the world every week. This episode is hosted by Deepthi Ahuja, the content head of HD Smartcast, the podcast division of HD Media Limited. Over to you, Deepthi.
This episode of Mint Etc. is brought to you by NewGen. The Indian fintech industry is estimated to be about $150 billion by 2025. Due to the rising per capita income, introduction of new products, innovation in technology, expanding distribution and networking, plus the increasing financial literacy amongst customers who avail such financial products, India has the third largest fintech ecosystem globally. But this sector comes with its own set of challenges, especially in a country like ours, where 65% of our population is rural. So what are these challenges and how can they be tackled to progress this sector and thereby our economy? That is what we are going to discuss in this episode of Mint TechCetera. For that, we are joined by Mr. Ritesh Verma, Head of Business Solutions Group, and Mr. Sunil Pandita, Head of Sales India and South Asia at NewGen. Both of them have been instrumental in digitally transforming services offered by this company. Hi, Ritesh. Hi, Sunil. Hello. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having us here.
It's our pleasure. So, Sunil, to begin with you, the BFSI sector has seen a fair share of change in customer needs. How has NewGen adapted to such shifting needs over the years?
So if you look at BFSI, it's been a sector which has always been at the forefront of technology adoption. And it's seen many challenges over the last few years. And those challenges are driven by change in customer expectations in a very diverse customer segment. So you have a customer who's a millionaire on the one side, and you also have a customer who is a priority sector lending customer. So that expanse is very, very wide. Now, in the quest of going completely digital, the financial services companies are also wanting to leverage the India stack, which has been made available. And that's wonderful thing that has happened in the financial services industry today. Mm. It has really democratized all the processes, all the journeys within financial services industry today. So we saw the trend, we caught the trend very early. We have been working in the financial service space for a long time with our platform, which is a low-code built hyper-automation platform. And with an understanding of domain of banking, where again, we have been leaders for many, many years, we were quick to adopt the changes in the way banks and financial services companies lend and onboard their customers. Right from the inception of onboarding them, servicing them, then collections and everything. As a platform, we make the journey straight through. So we help in DIY and with AI as part of the NewGen platform. We are also able to help in decisioning as part of the customer journeys, and with front office taken care of and a very strong mid office, we also have built integrations with various partners, various players in the ecosystem. And any banking journey, any financial services journey today is incomplete without being aligned as a part of the overall platform economy.
Correct.
So our platform allows the financial services institutions to serve their customers and have an end-to-end journey which is orchestrated, which is straight through, and which leverages the stack that is available today in terms of various APIs. So that's what we have been doing for the last few years.
You've literally summed it all up in one answer. But you know, of course, we'll go into the specifics. What are the specific challenges or pain points, you know, that traditional legacy systems pose, Ritesh? And, you know, you've worked for two decades in Newgen. So I'm sure you have a lot of insight on that. How does low-code, you know, technology that Sunil was mentioning earlier, how does it offer a more agile and a cost-effective solution?
That's really interesting. If you look at it, banking or BFSI industry as such has changed a lot.
Yeah.
So it started with ATMs being introduced.
Correct.
And then you get a fancy way of withdrawing money.
Yeah, I remember in college, my wire transfer.
So that's the starting point. We moved on to total bank branch automation. Core banking came in.
Yeah.
Check truncation system came in. So it's undergoing transformation. And digital is an imperative part of the whole transformation if you look at it. COVID just kind of expedited
Absolutely
that transformation.
That.
So no longer you need people to visit branches, and that's a given. So the banking industry is changing at a pace which is unprecedented. And to manage that change, you can't have the legacy systems, because legacy systems were built to handle things as they were.
Yeah.
So if you look at it a broader sense, a bank is nothing but an institution having multiple departments and multiple systems running. As Sunil talked about, the core challenge is how to orchestrate them all together and make them run as a system. So if in a nutshell, the legacy systems can't handle that.
Correct.
So you need a system which is able to bring it all together, thread it all together, help you move at a pace which the customer demands. And not how your bank wants to do it or an insurance company wants to do it. It's how the system is as per the policies and things like that. So to do all of this, you need to automate at scale, integrate all of your departments together and make a seamless information flow from the front, that's the portal or apps, to the mid office, to the back office.
Correct.
And that includes doing it quickly, changing it quickly.
Yeah.
That's where low-code comes in.
Yeah.
So low-code-based hyper-automation is the only answer to kind of work on the system of engagement and disseminate it from the system of records.
That's really interesting. You know, we were just a couple of weeks ago, we were recording another episode on AI and banking came up and we realized that maybe banks will be irrelevant, you know, beyond a certain point. and it will all be, because, I mean, UPI transactions and everything, they are also credit-based now, right? Like, the government is also facilitating those kind of things. So, coming to the platform now, I mean, if it's tech first, if it's AI first, coming to the platform, how does the Newgen One platform, along with the Newgen's contextual content service platforms, and I'm really interested in the content services platform, enhances customer interaction, streamlines processes, assists modern financial institutions in managing the growing influx of content?
See, as you mentioned in the first question, the legacy systems, and if you look at cores, they were able to serve banks for some time, but what was evidenced during COVID was the inability of a lot of systems to be able to serve customers in a totally digital world. So that's where the system of engagement comes in, and that's where Newgen plays a big role. Now, when we talk of system of engagement, it's a combination of your front office. It's a combination of not just building those wonderful journeys or portal or mobile for your customers. But it's also a function of how do you provision the subsequent services once you have onboarded a customer. And that service could be, you know, how quickly I'm able to issue a checkbook to you once I've, you know, signed you up as a customer. So that's where a strong orchestration there comes into play. Now, when you are doing that, it's also important that you have context. And where do you get that context? So you get that context as part of the process, as part of all the data related to the customer that you have, which could be in your core or which could be in your repository. Now that content has to be made available to the various participants in that journey in real time, so that decision making can happen. So we leverage that and also leverage the knowledge of the process, right? And leverage the knowledge of the various steps and run our AI on top of that, so that the decision making, we are able to facilitate a real time, feedback to the customer as part right. of as part of his journey, so that he can take the best action. So this we are able to do because the platform is able to map that entire journey right from the first point of onboarding
right.
till the time that his entire let's say in the case of lending, loan gets approved and he gets the docket and the money gets dispersed into his account. So we're able to do that.
Interesting. So context building becomes imperative when it comes to introducing new products in the market. In that sense, to be very honest, fintech is very similar to podcasting, especially when it comes to India. Because India is the third largest ecosystem, fintech ecosystem globally. And in terms of podcasting also, it's the third largest listening market. So in that sense, evangelizing of new products makes a lot of sense. Sunil, I have another question for you. From IT to retail, each industry in India has its own unique quirks. How can hyper-automation be custom tailored to suit the unique challenges and opportunities faced by different sectors?
Great question. So, while we spend time on banking and financial services, we have a fair bit of business which comes from, the other verticals
right.
in the enterprise sector. Now, the challenges at a principle are the same. In the case of banking, you have a core banking, you have an ERP in the case of enterprises. But the expectations of the customers, which is, the customer's customer, have changed. The expectations in terms of the journey, the expectation in terms of the UI, UX, they have changed.
Correct.
And even for the employees who service, the internal employees who service the external customers, not just in the consumer-facing businesses, but even in a business-to-business, which is applicable for a manufacturing company who is doing business with their distribution channel or doing business with their suppliers. So those expectations have changed. And that's where hyper-automation plays a big part in making sure that you are able to service that entire ecosystem, the entire stakeholders, which are internal, which are external, give them the experience they want, and make information available to your internal employees with the click of a button, because they're the ones who are servicing those customers. And within that platform, there are various components, which could be, for example, extracting data from a document,
yeah.
or could be classifying your Aadhaar versus your license. And so there's a bit of AI which is running there. Right.
Right.
Then could be, having a robust rules engine, which allows you to do underwriting in the case of a bank. Right. So those principles apply to enterprises also. And we believe since we have a platform which is built on low code, it allows you to understand and reimagine those processes and digitize those processes at scale, digitize those processes fairly quickly in an agile manner, and change them as business changes very, very quickly.
Of course, with AI, everything changes in a matter of seconds. Now, since you're, the head of the business group, I'd really like to know from you, Ritesh, hyper-automation holds promises for startups and small businesses. How might it open up new avenues for innovation and entrepreneurship in India's economic landscape?
So if you look at it, hyper-automation is about doing things quickly.
Correct.
Build it for change and doing it in completeness.
Hmm.
The new SMEs, the startups which are coming up from a business perspective, get a head start with hyper automation. They can literally work across all the three areas, build a fancy portal, build a fancy app, integrate it into the backend operations, make sure that all the data that is there is carried along. And also, as Sunil talked about, the content itself gets carried from the front end to the mid to the back.
Correct.
Now, doing this at any point of time was not so easy.
Mm.
Hyper-automation, low-code and technologies like this help the startups to really quickly gear up to be at par with the legacy organizations that have been there. And I think one of the areas where the growth story of India would really kind of go up is for making sure that these startups are able to gear up, evangelize, and do things in a more technologically savvy way as compared to any other organization. And that's where hyper-automation and low-code actually comes in handy for these guys.
Makes sense. But you know, when you talk about hyper-automation, you talk about low-code technology, you also talk about AI, you talk about ML, you talk about RPA. The thing is that there are a lot of security concerns also regarding these new technologies. There are a lot of concerns with regards to data sharing, right? All of these things are there. So let's talk policy now, right? Let's bring the government into the question. How can the government's stance on hyper-automation shape its adoption? And how can we ensure that it leads to growth that benefits everybody, including workforce development?
So you correctly mentioned that we'll split the two things, right?
Sure.
The security aspect and moving across the different technologies obviously has its own set of risks related to security, but also governance and auditability becomes a major issue.
Right.
That's where NewGen One comes in.
Right.
NewGen One is one platform that allows you to gear up for the front end, that's the portal, the app, the automation part of it, the addressal of the content or the documents that go along with it, the communication to the end customers. And what's most important is across the different layers, the auditability, security, and governance is seamless. There are no leakages in the middle. So one platform that allows you to take it through. So that's on the platform front or the technology front. On the other hand, the Indian government is taking a lot of measures in order to make sure that such leakages are not there.
Right.
Right. And also to make sure that the new policies are there to take care of the deficiencies that exist. One of such things is the EASE guidelines that came out to put the PSU banks at par with the private sector banks and maybe take it ahead. So it's all about Indian government or the RBI or the Ministry of Finance can as much do as creating policies for the betterment of things. But it's for them to adopt new technologies like hyper-automation to put that into action. So PSU banks, if you look at it today, are doing a lot when it comes to digital lending or the way that they service their customers.
Right.
And that's where technologies like hyper-automation or NewGen One come in, and they actually make a lot of sense. And it's not just the banks, insurances kind of working on same way. The way that cloud needs to be kind of taken care of is very, very imperative, and you have policies for that. So I think with the Indian framework or the mindset of taking India to new heights, has the government pitching in very, very strongly for new policies and benchmarks being there to take care of things. In fact, if you look at it, we in our business, we used to take the example of West to kind of say that, look, it's doing so well. But in today's times, the West says that, look at India, which has got all the ingredients correct in order to kind of move it to the next level. So I think we are on the right path. And as an Indian company, we are there to make a difference.
Awesome.
Sunil, your thoughts?
Hey, look, we've always worked. I mean, the industries that we work in are some of the most regulated industries. So it becomes important. We've been doing that. At a policy level, a lot of things that the government has done or in the specifically for banking, RBI has done, which translate to what technology can do to make sure that, you know, there is policy adherence, there is governance. So a simple example of auditability in all the processes that we do for banks. Now, that really plays to our strength, and that's something we've been doing for many, many years.
Mm.
With the AI coming in and with security becoming important and the new DPDP bill that's come in, consent is big there.
Yes.
So when we work with banks on initiation or onboarding a customer, so our product and our platform supports how we manage consent for customers. Right. And as Ritesh mentioned, on the cloud part, we have been cloud native. So there are, again, in these highly regulated industries in terms of very strict compliances about your cloud deployments.
Right.
So that's very central to what we do.
Interesting. You know, it's really fascinating to hear about NewGen and all the things that you've really, really been, you know, doing, spanning for almost three decades. 30 years, I was about to say. 30 decades, I was about to say. So spanning for about, you know, 3 decades, 30 years. Can you share some standout moments, you know, from your company's history? Probably something that you guys have witnessed yourselves.
It's a very, very interesting journey if you look at it. When we started with a vision of being a product organization. When the world was moving towards Y2K and solving that bug, the fact that we wanted to automate documents itself was a very tall claim. Why? Hmm. Because scanning of documents meant storage was expensive, data or moving documents scanned from one place to another place was expensive. And the scanner itself was expensive. So a vision of building a product, that too in the space of automation and management of documents, was a tall claim.
Hmm.
So it was much to kind of work with. But we stuck on to that. Our vision was that we will integrate people through processes across the different geographies.
Right.
And that's where we coined the term One World, One Workplace, which even holds true today.
Right.
And not more than anything, but it's something that we truly believe in. Mm. And all our endeavors are to make that a reality from the very beginning. So we marched on that journey, relentless of what people said.
Yeah.
And I think we've done pretty well. So if you look at it, we started with building this company. We got our fair share of international exposures. Domestically, we did really well. And the product evolved. Automation evolved. And the way that people actually look at automation actually evolved.
Right.
So I think we were there at the right time, right place. Awesome. To make all the difference.
Awesome. Generally, when it comes to, you know, really, really advanced technologies, deep tech, people who started earlier on, they generally end up saying we started a little too early, I think. Because with AI 2.0, right, with Gen AI, things have changed so drastically. People are adopting. I mean, most of my team uses Gen AI, right, just to generate content. So for you to say that we were at the right place at the right time, it must have also meant certain other components were working for you. Sunil, would you like to talk about those?
So, Ritesh covered most of the important milestones as part of our three-decade journey.
Yeah.
But for me, two very important milestones. One was when we got listed on the stock markets in India. I think that's a fairly big moment for an India product company to do that. One.
Yeah.
And secondly, the last financial year ended FY23, we crossed 1,000 crore revenue milestone, which is you know, very fascinating. So,
and the third, we being listed in the Gartner
as
a leader.
Oh.
So an Indian company being listed as a leader itself speaks a lot of the technology aspect.
Absolutely. Congratulations to you guys. As we come to, the end of our conversation, I'm curious about what's next for NewGen. Could you share some insights into the company's future plans and initiatives, especially in the light of, constantly evolving landscape of technology and also business, with things changing in terms of the fintech context, every Indian being able to get credit on UPI, which is the plan. So what's next? Where are you going next?
Let me take that with India as the backdrop. So India is at the right place at the right time. It's needless to say, all the numbers in terms of the size of the economy, the growth rates.
Right.
But I think we are very bullish on India. We will continue to work on product. We see a big opportunity in banking and financial services as they traverse the next journey of modernizing more applications, transforming, and in the end, servicing India, which is still an underserved credit market. So we see a big opportunity there, and of course there are other products there. We see government as a big opportunity for us as government transforms from mission mode projects, which continue to happen, but also government becoming more intelligent government. So they have swathes of data, and we have been a key part of digitization of government. In the next phase, we see government becoming more intelligent, and for example, giving you an alert that your passport is coming up for renewal. So,
correct.
So that's the other area we see. We see insurance at an inflection point, maybe a few years behind where banking is, but that's another sector for us. And obviously the larger enterprise where the ERP and the story is settled. There's a lot of innovation happening on the system of engagement, both for consumer-led businesses as well as B2B businesses. So we're very bullish on this market, and we have a fairly well-aligned go-to-market. We work closely with a partner ecosystem to make sure that we are adding value to our customers' business.
Right.
On the product front, if you look at it, we have been investing, as I said, and we will continue to invest on the innovation that happens on the products, because we've always been a technology-led company. So we'll continue to invest on the products and also to increase our global footprint. So that's the other agenda that we have. Today, we are present in a few countries, but we'd like to kind of expand that reach much, much more and make it successful.
Interesting. I have a fun question for both of you. So basically, if tech keeps evolving the way it does, and AI keeps happening to us the way it's happening, what if the currency changes, right? I mean, basically, right now, money is the currency, right? Money is the thing that makes the world go round. What if money is no longer the currency? Will the services still remain the same?
So if you look at it, CBDC is one such initiative which is transforming that the way that we look at currency itself.
Correct.
So that
Correct.
Would evolve.
Yeah.
The way that you transact would evolve.
Hmm.
Right? So if you look at the human evolution as such, on a fun fact as well.
Yes.
You moved away from a barter system to a coin.
To coins.
To a promissory note.
Right.
And from promissory
note. Somewhere there, blockchain.
Yeah. Blockchain is the new one. But
yeah.
CBDC is the next evolution of it. And you never know how it all evolves. So ultimately, you might be just left with one currency at a global level. So
Precisely.
That's all the things that are happening. But there would need to be some way of exchanging goods. I think that's the problem with civilization. So you need to have some way of exchanging some form so that you can manage the balance between what one has extra and the other wants to kind of procure it.
Yeah.
So that would always be.
We can just go on a meta path. So will you have any insights on that?
No, we couldn't imagine a few years back that we would actually not need a wallet. Right? Phone is enough to transit.
Yeah, I don't carry a wallet.
And with UPI, you can pretty much do everything. And it's also a function of, the government's initiatives. So today with Aadhaar and with UPI, now we're coming into an era where we're talking of consent layer. So with account aggregator.
Hmm.
So it's you actually won't need that. Of course, CBDC coming in and it's in
some stage,
shape now. I'm sure it'll proliferate. But with digitization happening for every artifact, so it's quite possible that we have a day where we just exchange tokens to transact anything. So yeah, look forward to that day.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming on Mint, etc. and sharing your thoughts on automation, low-code technology, a lot of fun regarding AI, and also a little bit of regulation on AI. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thanks for having us here.
So that's that for this episode. We really hope that you enjoyed what we discussed. And if you have suggestions in terms of what more we can cover as part of our podcast, do let us know. You can catch me at Distant Vicinity on Twitter and at Shovik Das on Instagram. Thank you so much. See you next time.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.